Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for you as usual. And our good martini looks forward to 2014. The vast majority of governorships will be on the line next year, as well as a third of the Senate and all of the House seats. The Obama administration has decided to lend its fundraising muscle to Democrats in these gubernatorial races, specifically in states that the president won twice, like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Florida, New Mexico. I think there's a couple others in there. But there's a problem. A lot of Democrats don't want the president anywhere near their race because of his tanking approval numbers. The money quote in a piece from Politico that ran today is from former Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell, a strong Hillary Clinton ally, if you remember the 2008 campaign. He says, if it were right now, I don't know that any Democrat running for governor would like the president involved. So, Jim, this is good on a number of fronts. You already have the Clinton people trying to undermine President Obama. And it's pretty clear that just in the here and now, Obama is an albatross to a lot of Democratic candidates.
It's very interesting how they lump together states like Pennsylvania, where Tom Corbett, the Republican incumbent, has some very tough numbers, and Wisconsin, where Scott Walker is doing much better, and Ohio, where John Kasich is doing pretty well. Rick Scott is in trouble in Florida, but I got to say, I can't imagine being all that thrilled by having Charlie Crist as your standard bearer as the Democrats, because if you're a Democrat, you really spent like literally the past decade trying to get Charlie Crist out of office. And now you're going to turn around and tell voters, this is exactly who we need running this state. I'm really kind of surprised there has been more of an effort to push Crist out and to get a actual lifelong Democrat challenger. A little bit of talk that Senator Nelson might be entering that bag. In none of those places are Obama's personal ratings all that high. Sure, he can show up and your diehard Democrat donors are going to show up and write big checks. And that might be the most good that he can do for these folks. Governorship is probably one of the areas where it's toughest for a president to have the biggest value-added effect for a candidate because, you know, it's not like they can say, we need, you know, somebody in Tallahassee or we need somebody in Harrisburg or we need somebody in Columbus to enact my policies. It's not a federal policy. It's a much easier case to make for Senate races and for House races. But here's the thing. Obamacare's top-to-bottom failure that continues to unfold in front of our eyes and in our second martini today indicates to us big government doesn't do things well. Big government always gets promoted on a grandiose promises that government can't deliver upon. Regulating human behavior and complicated markets is beyond the capacity of government bureaucrats. This has been the conservative message for decades and decades, and we're seeing it come true once again. So every president by year six is, you know, kind of wearing out the welcome. I remember, you know, 2006 midterms, President Bush really couldn't travel to a lot of parts of the country. He was very unpopular. And while we're a year out, it's really not that unthinkable to see a very similar scenario in which Obama can only hit the campaign trail in the bluest parts of the country because he's just not an effective salesman anymore for all the parts of the country that they need to win, and particularly in some of those Senate races where they're really competitive red states. So Obama, you know, won some of those states, but I really, you know, his effectiveness as a salesman in places like Florida, Ohio, and Wisconsin are pretty shaky, and a lot has happened since fall of 2012.
As you foreshadowed, Jim, on to martini number two now, and the White House is now saying the vast majority of the American people can get onto healthcare.gov. They say you can get up to 50,000 people on there at one time, 800,000 a day. The first real day that people tried to get on there, which was Monday, they did not get to 50,000 before people got put in the waiting line. There's still a myriad of security questions, some saying that there weren't even security protocols put into place for this website. There's issues about information making it from the exchange to insurance companies and so forth. So despite a very vigorous public relations effort the past few days, the facts are still not on the administration's side here. And more importantly, millions of Americans are still left in the lurch.
Pretty much every day, if not since October 1st, then certainly since probably mid-October, the lead item in the morning jolt has dealt with Obamacare. And I don't want to write the same thing every day, but each day there is some new wrinkle to this fascinating, very basic story, which is that the Obama administration says, it's fixed. It's ready to go. We're going to make the deadline. Everything's going well. Basically Chip Diller at the end of Animal House, you know, all is well, all is well. And it's not. And each day there's some new wrinkle that illustrates, no, it's not fixed. I mean, the site is, you know, you have the larger problems with Obamacare as a whole. But, you know, there's been obviously a great deal of deserved attention on a website that just flat out was nowhere near ready to go on day one. The administration spent a week insisting the problems weren't really that bad. then acknowledged the problems were pretty bad, but they'd have things fixed, and they set out this date of end of November. Well, here we are a couple days into December, and the problems are less of the site crashing, but every bit as serious in that the wrong data is being sent to insurers. And this is not, you know, you got to go look in some obscure technology journal to see this kind of stuff. This is above the fold, page A1, Washington Post this morning. And so this morning, the message from the administration is we are launching a new PR offensive to persuade people that Obamacare is terrific. And, every once in a while you say something about the president. Like, if I say President Obama is not a stupid man, a big chunk of our listeners are probably going to say, yes, he is. And you probably can't get through Harvard Law, do all the things President Obama has done, and be stupid per se. But he does have some really giant blind spots. And one of the blind spots, and this may be a matter of him not hearing what people are telling him when they give him bad news. Remember that report that he's Mr. No Drama Obama, and his staff doesn't like to give him bad news. Apparently, he doesn't want to deal with any bad news when it happens. Or whether it's one of those things where he really can't grasp as a problem as anything more than a messaging problem, as a branding issue, as he said to a conference late last month. The issue with Obamacare is not the brand. It's not bad feelings about the brand, Mr. It's that it doesn't flipping work. And you could have the best advertising in the whole wide world, but if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And we have places like Oregon where, you know, they had all these kind of hippie singing ads about how great the exchange was, and the state exchange website doesn't work. So as a result of that, nobody's signed up in that state. And you feel like you want to grab somebody by the lapels and say, why are you not understanding this? And this is our bad martini, because this is a really big problem. It's going to affect a lot of people. And we have a White House that really seems to think that the solution is better commercials. They really seem to think that the issue is better PR events. And, you know, once again today, Obama's going to go to the White House. He's going to bring up people and talk about how much Obamacare has helped them. Well, we remember from the October events that some of these people said, yes, thanks to Obamacare, I can now purchase insurance. And then the media went back and talked to them, and they found out actually they haven't been able to purchase insurance. It turns out they didn't qualify for the subsidy that they initially were told that they did, and they can't really afford the plans that are offered to them. So on the one hand, policy-wise, this is a catastrophe for the country. Politically, for the Republicans, we are blessed with an opposition that does not know how to solve problems. The very best thing that Obama could do for himself and his cause and his plan and his beliefs and his remaining time in office would be to say, you know what? I'm canceling the Happy Talk event today. I'm getting Jeff Zients and Sebelius and all of our top people, and we're going in there and we're telling the American people just how bad the problems are. And we're going to level with people about the security issue. And if it's not secure, we're taking the site down because we don't want anybody's personal information used by identity thieves. Imagine if President Obama did that. Imagine what a big impact that would have. Imagine how unexpected. But he can't. He's got to spin. He's got to say, no, everything's fine. And what's more, you know, as President Obama said, we're still trying to determine why I wasn't told about this sooner. He's honestly telling us, I don't know what went wrong, and I still don't know why it went wrong. And I don't even know who's responsible for how it went wrong. And I know nothing, basically. Mazel tov. We're in great shape, aren't we?
Mazel tov. Great transition to martini number three now, because I believe we're in the last couple of days of Hanukkah. Thanksgiving, of course, is past. And so, as Jim pointed out in the Morning Jolt today, Christmas has the stage pretty much from late this week to, obviously, December 25th. And Jim has been observing a number of things that drive him nuts about the war on Christmas in both directions, but particularly the people getting offended from the left. Jim?
I'm going to cite the cultural masterpiece that is Arrow on the WB, Greg. I'm sure you're familiar with it. It's inspired by DC Comics, Green Arrow comic books. And at one point, you know, Oliver Queen, the protagonist, has some woman who helps him, kind of a hacker type, who helps him, you know, find information or something. It's their holiday episode of last year. And he says to her, Merry Christmas. And she looks back to him and says, I'm Jewish. And he kind of winces and he says, Happy Hanukkah. And they kind of smile. And the scene, and it's a, you know, cute little scene that kind of reveals that this character is Jewish, that, you know, people may not have noticed that. There's no, how dare you, Oliver Queen, you have offended me. He makes the assumption that somebody celebrates Christmas and they don't. She informs him, and life goes on and everybody's happy. Usually, you know, Hanukkah and Christmas overlap or around the same time of year, and Kwanzaa is somewhere in the mix. And this year, by the way, Kwanzaa doesn't start until after Christmas. So when people say, like, there's really a one holiday ends in a couple of days, And one holiday is pretty far off. So starting about Thursday night, when they say happy holidays, you really mean Merry Christmas. And we've kind of reached this point where saying Merry Christmas has somehow turned controversial in our culture. Greg, is Arbor Day a big deal to you?
No.
Okay. If I said to you happy Arbor Day and you're like, I'm not planning on planting any trees. I'm not going to hug any. Like you don't get that upset about it because it's not that. We live in a world with real, actual problems. And the idea of someone greeting us with a holiday that we don't celebrate, the idea that this would turn into something that you would literally file a federal case over is kind of mind-boggling. I understand that when Christians complain about the idea of a war on Christmas, yes, it's overwrought, particularly when there is an actual war on Christians in a lot of countries around the world. Some people are out to sell books or get in front of TV cameras. Yes, I get the idea that this feels like an overhyped phenomenon. But when you see things like that Postal Service display that had one stamp for Hanukkah with a menorah and one stamp for Kwanzaa with candles, and both of them are labeled Hanukkah and Kwanzaa, and the one in the middle is a gingerbread house with no label whatsoever, then you can't help but get the feeling that some people have decided that over-display of Christian symbols, never mind Santa Claus, never mind Frosty the Snowman or Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, but an actual baby Jesus or a manger or a Star of Bethlehem or any of that kind of stuff would somehow be controversial. People might get offended. People might get their feelings hurt. So don't do that. And it just kind of comes to this thing where we've just become afraid of someone being offended. And we end up either self-censoring or others begin censoring us. And we end up in this sense where somehow we are so worried about minority rights that we forget about the rights of other people. Christians have every right in the world to express their faith and express their beliefs. Of all the ways you can express your faith, I think saying Merry Christmas is a pretty darn innocuous one. And if your lack of belief or if your belief in a different faith is so fragile that you can't handle someone telling you Merry Christmas, I think you have to stay in bed. I think you're really not ready for dealing with modern America, to say nothing of past Americas. And it's this, litigious, politically correct Fabergé ego mentality that these hyperactive ninnies are just trying to impose upon the rest of us. And I'm tired of it. And I mean, it's kind of exhausting. Yeah, there's some, Christians who probably overhype this problem. But if you want Christians to not overhype the problem, then don't throw a fit when they say Merry Christmas. So that's Jim's holiday season message. Some people like it. Some people don't like it. If you celebrate a different holiday, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa. I think Diwali came a little bit earlier. Eid's down the road a little bit. Whatever you Festivus, whatever you celebrate, enjoy it this year. But if I say Merry Christmas to you, don't get your nose out of joint. There are much bigger things in this life to worry about. Also, I won't get you a present then.
Jim? Couldn't have said it any better. That was very well done, very well written earlier today, very well spoken now. And I think a lot of people are nodding their heads in agreement. You just can't hear their applause right now because they're listening on the computer. So have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And please join us again on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.